There they are, the Tom Tom Club, and the song from them called The Wordy Rapping Hood, which is the name of this little wireless program here on RPPFM. The voice of the peninsula, Tracy Hutchison, here with you. And my guest on The Wordy Rapping Hood on this Friday is someone who's making a really big influence to our cultural life on the Mornington Peninsula, both as the director of the Mornington Peninsula Regional Gallery, but also head of art and culture at Mornington Peninsula Shire. I'm thrilled that Jane Alexander has got time to even step out of the gallery at the moment and come in and talk. Jane Alexander, welcome to Art Awp. It's great to meet you and see you again, in fact.
Thank you, Tracy. And as we discovered, we did meet some time ago when we had the Reg Mombasa exhibition at the gallery,
which was incredible, and a lovely floor talk from the very laconic and wonderful Mr. Mombasa, or Mr. O'Doherty, depending on which
AKA
particular persona he's brought to the table at the time. Yeah. Well, the premise of this program is to really delve into the life and times of people doing great work on the peninsula, and I've been looking to get you in for some time, so I'm thrilled you're here. First question on this program is always, what brought you to the Mornington Peninsula? So, Jane Alexander, what brought you to the peninsula?
Well, it's an interesting question, and I'm sure many people ask themselves that question. I would have to say I was very much influenced by my childhood. I had both my maternal and paternal sets of grandparents who had places on the peninsula. My paternal grandparents were based in Mount Eliza from the 1950s, and my maternal grandparents had what was called a weekender in Mount Martha.
So lucky them.
I grew up predominantly in Melbourne, in the city, but spent many weekends and holidays on the Mornington Peninsula, so it sort of got into the pores of my skin in a way. Then I had an opportunity to live here for a short time in the 80s for a year or two. Then I went away, and the lure of the peninsula remained with me, and I came back to the peninsula on a permanent basis from the middle of the 1980s.
I'm still here. And happily for us, luckily for us, you are still here doing fabulous work. I've just come from the Mornington Peninsula Gallery this morning, actually, where the exquisite work on paper exhibition is currently on, and we'll talk at length about that later in this hour. But I want to sort of, I guess, unpick and unravel that path to being the director of the gallery and heading up the arts and culture division with the local Shire Council. A really varied and interesting career around art education initially and education. You were originally an educator, got a primary school and secondary school qualification, dipping right into your CV, as I have
way,
done.
way back in the early years, yes.
But majoring in very much focused on literature and art. That was obviously driving you from a very, very early age in your formative years. What drove that? What was it in your upbringing, and were you surrounded by that sort of thing in the growing up?
Yes, look, both my parents, who are still with us, have a very strong academic science background. However, there were a number of members of the extended family who were very much interested in the arts, and in fact, my paternal grandfather, the one I mentioned earlier at Mount Eliza, he was a prominent architect, modernist architect from the 1930s. So I could argue that there was a little influence there. Also, I always grew up with the stories of one of my grandmother's uncles, who was a really successful artist. Turn of the last century, he went off to Paris with all the well-known Australian artists of the day, Max Meldrum, Hugh Ramsay. And there were always paintings by this artist, Ambrose Patterson, in family houses on my mother's side. So I suppose that indirectly made me aware that there was more than science in one's life, seeing I was pretty much surrounded by that in my immediate family. Then I was very fortunate that my mother in particular encouraged me to do some more work on Ambrose Patterson. So I'm jumping around slightly. I did do primary teacher training, not because I aspired to be a teacher. It was sort of a fallback position in many ways because I really didn't know what I wanted to do.
And quite a common choice for many people too.
And in the course of doing that teacher training, I did a minuscule paper on Ambrose Patterson, and that whet my appetite, so to speak.
For those, including myself, I have to admit to that. Tell us the significance of Ambrose Patterson as an artist, Australian artist.
Yes, well, he was of the he was very much influenced by the first generation French Impressionists. And at the turn of the 19th, 20th century, Paris was the Mecca. It was the big lure. And any artist who wanted to earn his stripes and or her stripes endeavoured to make their way to Paris, the art capital of the world, and spend some time in the ateliers and working towards perfecting their practice and developing a reputation. So Patterson, he came into a very small inheritance in 1899 and used that to take himself off to Paris. He was very fortunate in that he was quite well connected because one of his brothers, Thomas, was married to Nellie Melba's sister Bella. Patterson was a bit of a rat bag, but having
a bon
said
vivant.
That, yeah, in a way he was, but he was still very committed to what he was doing. But he was a restless character, and at one stage he took himself off to New York, sort of hoboed his way across to New York, fell on very hard times, and Melba was performing in New York, and he basically made the most of his network. And the story goes that she sent him back to Paris to keep painting. So it was clear, and I've never been able to establish exactly how much she gave him in terms of pounds to progress himself, but she certainly did look after him and support him for a year or two back in Paris. And I'm presuming most people have heard of Hugh Ramsay. He was arguably one of Australia's greatest artists, and he tragically died in 1906 from that dreaded disease, TB, that really was a plague. And the story goes that Patterson introduced Melba to Ramsay, and poor old Patterson got the flick, and Melba took Ramsay on and supported him.
Jane Alexander is our guest on the Wordy Rapping Hood, RPPFM, talking about the inspirations and the interesting, decisions and opportunities that have come your way that have led you to your current role as the director of the Mornington Peninsula Regional Gallery and head of arts and culture at Mornington Shire. Two very large hats and big responsibilities. We'll work toward that as well. So you're talking, Jane, about the things that have, I guess, really started to spark that interest that led from, I guess, an interest in art, an appreciation, an interest in education, to melding the two, which was how your career in many ways sort of started its trajectory, arts education.
I didn't set out to be an arts educator. But that's something you need to be effective at along the way. I was more interested initially in the research and the more academic aspects of art and art theory. So I did teach very briefly at primary school level and then for a slightly longer period at secondary school level. I think I was a reasonable teacher. However, that wasn't what I wanted to do long term. Mm. And while I was undertaking secondary teaching, I was also at the same time undertaking a master's degree at Monash University in Australian Art and Architecture.
Mm. Just in the spare time, knocking off a master's.
Well, no, I was sort of combining that with, you know, when you have children, what you do is you juggle lots of things, working with small children, family demands, working and study. So it was a sort of combination of everything.
Mm.
So I had some amazing lecturers at Monash University, and I produced a minor thesis around Ambrose Patterson, and that fed directly into the first retrospective exhibition of Ambrose Patterson's works. And that exhibition I undertook as an independent curator, and it toured to three venues in Victoria. And there was a catalogue produced for that sort of was the first significant publication on Patterson as well. And everything sort of flowed from that in a way.
And the Diploma of Museum Studies must have been acquired in the similar sort of period when you were knocking off the Masters of Arts.
That followed immediately after the Masters, because if you want to, or, you know, I'm talking about 20 years ago now, a pretty fundamental ticket to being a curator in an exhibition or being an independent curator is the museum studies course, which a number of universities offer now. But it was the sort of piece of paper that's like your ticket in a way. I went along and I did that. Then I was very fortunate that I had a break, lucky break. I saw there was a vacancy in education at McClelland Gallery.
Mm.
We are talking some years ago now.
93, I think. It took
around 93, yes. And I wrote to the chair of the trustees and asked if I could have the job, and he said yes, I could. And that moved quite quickly into a curatorial role, and then a few years later into the role of director.
Mm. It's interesting that this, I guess, the growth in influence that gallery and the way in which it's actually really shaped much of it, it's sort of had a real ripple effect culturally around the peninsula, McClelland. What do you see when you're involved in something like that and you're part of growing something and in an incredible, obviously with some very significant philanthropic support around something like McClelland, but how do you see that impacting on community and art in terms of building community and drawing people into something that really is for art's sake? It's such an extraordinary place. What's it like being in the middle of that, sort of creating that kind of place for people to come and enjoy something for the sake of it alone?
Mm. Look, there's absolutely no doubt that without community involvement and engagement, you have to ask, well, why do these places exist? So it's fundamental that community and artists are involved in any public gallery. The administrators, the curators, the staff are part of that whole story.
Mm.
But I always pay tribute to the artists and the participants. They're critical. My time at McClelland, looking back, was very much about we went through a redevelopment stage at that point in time. The building was feeling, in fact, very much in need of a lot of work. So architects Williams and Bogue spent a considerable amount of time redeveloping what's now the very successful cafe zone there. That was the storage facility, and a new purpose-built storage facility was created during my time there. So I was there as director for 3 to 4 years, and half of that time I was involved in the redevelopment, which was the building works and then relaunching the gallery. But McClelland was really, really blessed and fortunate to have some wonderful supporters, including the late Dame Elizabeth Murdoch, with whom I worked very closely.
Who was that like?
Time.
She was kind of an extraordinary matriarch, as I guess people in a more recent sense know her. My favourite Dame Elizabeth quote was her likening herself to the rose that was named after her, because she talked about that, you know, the best way to look after roses is to... be sort of they were quite rugged and prickly, and that they didn't need much looking after, and she sort of liked the thought that sort of, you know, somehow was a self description. What working closely with someone like that, what was that like for you?
Look, she was a very self effacing person. She was always available. She was willing to come and stuff envelopes, and very accessible, supportive. She didn't make any extraordinary or unreasonable demands whatsoever. She was absolutely committed to the gallery, and the Elizabeth Murdoch Sculpture Foundation was established in 1989, and I was fortunate that I was at the gallery from around 93, so I saw the growth of the sculpture collection in its infancy. She was incredibly generous in terms of supporting artists and acquiring significant sculptures, including a magnificent Clement Meadmore sculpture that features outside the building. She was a regular human being. It's interesting. I didn't see her as I saw her as somebody significant, somebody who was making a wonderful contribution, but I saw her just as a regular, ordinary person as well.
Jane Alexander is with us, the director of the Mornington Peninsula Gallery and also head of arts and culture at Mornington Peninsula Shire, 25 past 12 on RWP FM. We will have a small break for music in a moment, Jane. I just want to, I guess, revisit that idea of, you know, the role of philanthropy and in supporting the arts, and what that, the value of that, I guess, for in a community sense. But you've been at the coalface of that now for some time. How do you quantify that? I mean, is there a way to talk about the value of that in terms of what that brings us in terms of, you know, community engagement?
Look, I think it's philanthropists are wonderful examples of altruism, and I think we need a lot more of that in Australia. I think people can be a little bit careful, a little bit tight on occasions. Having said that, I've seen the other side of the coin. In terms of the Mornington Peninsula Regional Gallery, where I'm currently the director, I see philanthropy you know, close up and first hand through donations of works of art in particular. But I wouldn't like to measure it in terms of dollars and cents, because there are people who periodically make small donations, financial donations of even $100. And for them, that is significant. And it's about the act of giving, supporting. It doesn't matter so much about the amount. Having said that, you know, I've seen philanthropy on a scale that in financial terms eclipses the $100, but they are of equal value in terms of the act of giving and being generous and valuing the cultural dimension
That's right.
That is so important to us and our humanity.
That's right. That that idea, that sort of genuine benevolence that's around a genuine cultural enrichment, which is the essence of philanthropy at its best. 12:27, Jane Alexander is with us. We will pause for a moment for a musical interlude. We're sort of rocketing along almost halfway through the hour, Jane. A couple of selections I've made on your behalf. This is by a band called Karma County, featuring Jimmy Little, the late Jimmy Little, on lead vocals with Brendan Gallagher in this band, and the song from them called Secret Country. The late Jimmy Little out front of Karma County with Brendan Gallagher, and the song from that band, Secret Country. The Wordy Rapping Hood is the show that profiles local residents on the peninsula doing fabulous things, as so many locals are doing, and one of them doing great things with the Mornington Peninsula Gallery. Jane Alexander is the director of the gallery and also heads up the Arts and Culture Division of Mornington Peninsula Shire. Jane, the current exhibition is the Work on Paper exhibition at the gallery, and I'm now dropping the regional out of it because off air you've indicated we know the Mornington Peninsula Regional Gallery as a regional gallery, and regional galleries have been in the spotlight of late, I guess, through the very kind of blockbustery type shows that have happened, particularly at Bendigo, the Karen Quinlan Bendigo effect. Is there a sense that the Mornington Gallery has to do a Bendigo? Do we have to do a Bendigo here?
Look, I think Bendigo has a completely different history from the Mornington Peninsula Regional Gallery, and I'm still using the word regional because we are a defined region. Bendigo's gallery was built on the gold rush and gold money. It has absolute wealth base that the Mornington Peninsula Regional Gallery doesn't have. The Mornington Peninsula Regional Gallery's just over 40 years, and it was established through grassroots support, which is really fundamental and important and about community. Bendigo also, it was, you know, community and grassroots, but it has a much longer history, and it's developed in a completely different way, in a wonderful way. I mean, it's an absolute magnet, and it's wonderful for that community and that region. I see you're really comparing an orange with an apple. And when you look across all the regional galleries in Victoria, and there are roughly 26 of them, when you try and compare, it's really difficult to do it because there are no two that are similar whatsoever. So to ask whether we would
have a giant size Marilyn in the park.
We don't have the space. Firstly, we're a modest gallery. We punch above our weight, though, in terms of the exhibitions we develop and bring to the Mornington Peninsula and its community. But at this point in time, you know, we can't be a Bendigo. We can aspire to be better and bigger and more significant. But, you know, I think there's one Bendigo, there's one Mornington Peninsula Regional Gallery, there's one Ballarat, there's one Geelong.
And the difference is fabulous.
And you do need to retain those points of difference. Otherwise, you know, why are people going to want to go to the same sort of thing around the state or the country for that matter? So I think those points of difference are actually your strength.
The gallery that you are now the director of and have been involved with since the early 2000s in various roles, and the director of the gallery for since 2010, when you took on that role, what was your kind of personal vision for what you wanted to do with the gallery?
I wanted to be sure that we absolutely maximised all the resources that we had in terms of human resources, our collection, our networks, and our reputation at that point in time, and to continue developing and delivering the best exhibitions and programs that we could for this community. So in the intervening period, I was working on exhibition development prior to being appointed permanent director at the beginning of 2010. I had been involved in the development of the Emma Minnie Boyd exhibition, Emma Minnie Boyd being the matriarch of the famous Boyd family of artists. Two significant exhibitions that were developed post 2010 were A Sea of Dreams Part 1 and Part 2, where we, the curatorial team, when I say we, I absolutely never take credit for anything solely. It's all about a magnificent team at work at the Regional Gallery. We delivered Part 1 and Part 2 of Sea of Dreams, and the works in those two exhibitions are incredible. They came from major institutions, major private collections, and they were gathered together for a particular theme, but you could not have put together a more significant collection of Australian art than what you saw in either of those Sea of Dreams exhibitions. And I think, you know, it's a privilege to work on an exhibition like that, and it's very humbling when institutions and people are so generous about lending works, and it's wonderful that those sorts of experiences can happen right here on the Mornington Peninsula. And those two exhibitions, plus others, and I'm leaving numerous exhibitions out, receive amazing media coverage. We get double page spreads in daily Melbourne newspapers. And our reputation, you know, is consolidated, and we're building upon the foundations. You know, you can't leave out of the picture the earlier directors. You know, each director of the Regional Gallery has made a huge contribution. If I was to start from scratch, you know, I wouldn't be sitting here talking about some of these exhibitions today.
When you talk about a gallery that punches above its weight, I mean, that's always been the way I've always been really surprised in lots of ways. Like, wow, there's the Nolan exhibition, which was just a breathtaking the Nolan Antarctic series, which was when you talk about acquiring things from a range of really high profile personal collections and public collections as well, just astonishing work. And even this morning went and had a quick look around the current exhibition, which is your flagship work on paper exhibition. That work is really breathtaking. You walk in, it's an incredible space. I want to ask you about the one that won, the work on paper by Daniel O'Shane, which is a story of a sacred waterhole up in Cairns Way. What can you tell us? It's always hard to describe pieces of work on the radio, but and none of the photos, in fact, even do this work justice. But what was it about that work that made it the winner of this year's prize?
Yes, it's a good question. It's really difficult to select. I'll just provide a weeny bit of background information. We have our National Works on Paper exhibition every 2 years. And we have entries from right across the country. So this year we had close to 1,000 works entered. From that, the selectors and judges whittled it down to 66 works for the exhibition. Last Saturday, the judges, who were Kirsty Grant, who's the CEO and director of Heidi Museum of Art, and Roger Butler, who's a senior curator of prints and drawings from the National Gallery of Australia, and myself, came together again to actually try and ascertain which work
compare
would be
apples
the
and
one.
Oranges.
Yeah. Well, in a way, it's a bit like that, but it was pretty clear from the start. The three of us were absolutely drawn to the work that was awarded the major award. And you can identify some aspects of the work. Sometimes it's a gut reaction based on years of experience, and particularly with the other judges. Roger Butler has seen, he's been at the National Gallery of Australia for decades. He has seen every artist's work on paper.
Mm.
Imaginable. This work just stood out, the freshness, the vibrancy. The technique the artist used was vinyl cut, which gives really sharp, clean lines. The scale was impressive. The palette was just beautiful. The story was just delightful as well. It was not critical, but it was even more the amazing that the artist, in fact, is a young emerging artist, an emerging artist. There are various definitions of what an emerging artist is. That can be tied to age or the years a person has been practicing their art. But the artist is 26 years of age, and it's an incredibly accomplished work, and I think it's a wonderful addition. We don't particularly focus on Indigenous art, but it certainly will be displayed. It tells a story in a rich and engaging and personal way as well.
Mm. A traditional Dreamtime story from the Torres Strait.
It's about the shell and the water, the shell being the vessel to carry the water. And it's a lovely story because this shell with the fresh drinking water, no matter how much you drank from the shell, it always remained full.
Yes.
But once we get to land, you know, humans and, you know, horrible creatures that they can be on occasions fought over this wonderful shell, and in the end, the qualities, what they desired was lost, but it did form some water holes of significance too.
It genuinely is a breathtaking piece. You walk in and as you say, Jane, the accomplishment of the artist is extraordinary, and I'm in a relatively young artist as well at 26, so Daniel O'Shane. It's fabulous. Mm. Some of the other ones, just quickly, we'll pick out a few of the other things that really jumped out at me. How long have people got to see this one this time around?
This is on for another 7 weeks.
Yeah, it's great. There's some beautiful works, some of them really very tiny and very delicate.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favourites was the Love Letter to 10 Mammals, which two women have worked on their own interpretation of ring-tailed mongooses and wee little creatures.
Mm-hmm.
But very delicate, small works.
Yes.
And you obviously like that one too, because it's an acquisition.
I love that the minute I saw it. Mm. And, you know, Tracy speaks of acquisitions. The gallery has its own permanent collection, and since 1973, it's acquired works through the National Works on Paper or its equivalent. And, you know, I must acknowledge the huge support from the Mornington Peninsula Shire and also the Talis Foundation, and this year the Ursula Hoff Institute.
Mm.
But the little work that you're referring to, it's delicate, it's detailed, it's precise, and interestingly, it's a collaboration. And I've noticed over more recent years, there's been a lot more works where people have collaborated.
Mm.
You get two artists working together, each developing a component of the work and trying to develop a relationship between what each does. Also, over the years, I've noticed in more recent years, more artists' books. So they're always interesting to display because sometimes you can't display them in their entirety and you're missing more than you actually see.
Mm.
But we've acquired a number of artists' books. And last year, in fact, one of the artists who worked on this collaborative work that we're talking about, Louise Jennison, we acquired one of her artists' books 2 years ago. And it is exquisitely drawn pictures, paintings of birds.
Mm.
And that leads me into an amazing exhibition we're developing.
Nice work.
Over summer, starting in early December, the gallery will be presenting an exhibition called Birds, Flight Paths in Australian Art. And we know You know, there's amazing bird life on the Mornington Peninsula. So we're directly connecting with that, but we're going to be telling some incredible stories around birds, birds in art.
And I guess through that, it's sort of the themes that you've been talking about just in describing both the works in the current exhibition and the bird exhibition. By its nature, art intersects with life and contemporary issues. The bird life, the migration of birds is one of the many things that come under the spotlight when we talk about climate's changing and land use changing and loss of habitat and loss of landing points for birds. So we see that already around the Western Port and people are doing lots of work around that.
All those aspects are going to be explored in this exhibition as well as the magnificence and the absolute beauty of birds, how the bird's been used as a motif in design. And there's going to be some interactive works as well. So, and we're going to have lots of programs around the exhibition.
That's the summertime.
Over summer. But before summer and between National Works, we've got the Salon des Refusés,
which is
the second pick of the famous Archibald Prize.
Ah.
So this year, the Mornington Peninsula Regional Gallery had the Archibald Prize in 2013 and 14. Last year and this year, we're presenting the Salon des Refusés, which is the second round pick of those works, and we leave it up to the viewers, the visitors, to decide whether it's better than the big Archies. And a number of people last year were sure it was better than what was on at Ballarat.
Jane Alexander is with us, the director of the Mornington Peninsula Regional Gallery, our guest on the Wordy Rapping Hood here on Art or PFM, also head of arts and culture at Mornington Peninsula Shire. And I'm going to get you to put your Shire cap on now and talk about just how does local government, what's the role for local government to build community and engage community through art? How do you do that? It's such a huge blank canvas, a diversity of population. How do you know what are the right things for this community in Mornington Peninsula?
Well, you're never absolutely sure you know what the right thing is, firstly. I think the critical thing is empowering community. I think I'm not here to do everything for everyone out there. You're there to do it yourself, but to be shown the skills or be given a pathway toward doing that. So the Arts and Culture Unit is very much about supporting and empowering community. Community should make its own decisions. It shouldn't be me making decisions. I can provide advice or make recommendations or make people aware of something, and that's a really critical and important role. The Shire is very generous. It supports many arts and culture initiatives, from the Peninsula Short Film Festival.
Absolutely.
We're hoping to develop more programs in performing arts as well. Great supporter of music, supports the Jazz Festival, Orchestra of Victoria coming to the Peninsula each year as well.
I think there's a Writers' Festival too, isn't there?
There's probably a slight gap at the moment, but that is certainly something in this period of change that's going to be revisited. So it's an open door. Like, if community has any suggestion, we're more than welcome to hear from them. We also have the Creative Community Grant Scheme that I think the 1st of August, people can apply for a creative community grant up to $5,000.
Any particular criteria around that? Like, are there certain things?
You can't be. You need to be part of a legal entity or supported by a legal entity.
Yep.
But it's quite broad. I mean, it can support filmmaking. It can support the development of a mural, or even a writing program. The other thing that I haven't mentioned is also the Artist in Residence program, which the Shire supports, and there's a residency at Police Point at Portsea, and it's just coming out of its pilot years. So in the pilot year, approximately 13 artists, and 70% of those were Peninsula artists, spent some time at what's called Cottage 5, or the old Gatekeeper's Cottage that's been renovated, at Police Point, which abuts Point Nepean. And we're building that program as well. Mm. And from that, many artists have made great contributions to this community through running masterclasses and mentoring, and a number have also created bodies of work that they've donated to this community as well. So, you know, there's huge diversity. It's a little team, and we spread ourselves thin, but we're, you know, doing the best we absolutely can. The Shire, I must say, is very supportive. It funds quite a range of programs, and I've mentioned a number of those. The other area that comes into arts and culture is local history. So there are 8 museums across the Shire as well, and 23 historical societies. And one of the really interesting projects, again, the Shire supporting that, is the digitisation project. And there are hundreds of thousands of objects or documents or items, and they progressively over the last 5 years, and it'll probably be for many more years ahead, are being photographed and digitised, and eventually the hope is that these are rich, the absolutely amazing resources will be available online for people to view.
Mm. Mm. Jane Alexander has been our guest on the Wordy Rapping Hood on this Friday. We're about 8 minutes away from 1 o'clock, coming up to some news again at 1 o'clock. Jane, you've talked a lot about the works that you're involved with, both at the gallery and at the Shire, and your now long-standing commitment to sort of living and working on the mm. peninsula, and I guess the diversity of art that delivers and community that delivers. What keeps you, quite apart from the volume of work that I suspect you're juggling, which seems a little bit mind-blowing, but what sort of keeps you interested and keeps you engaged with this local community from an arts perspective, wanting to be a real arts leader and arts educator on the peninsula?
Mm. Yeah, I think everybody needs to ask that question of themselves from time to time. I think that I can still make a positive contribution. I believe I have skills and understandings that can make a difference. The minute I felt I couldn't make a positive difference, I would probably question why I'm doing what I'm doing. Mm. And that's probably what motivates me. I feel that I've been so fortunate in terms of the opportunities that I've had in life. And I'm more than happy to mentor people and leave a legacy of something behind. Mm-hmm. It's not an easy question to answer, because it's hard to sort of nail why you do anything.
But it's also about what you see the art bring to people, and being a facilitator of that, isn't it?
It is about that as well. I think the thing is, yeah, look, I'm struggling to answer that particular question.
Tricky one.
Yeah.
Well, we wish you well, and the current exhibition is on for the next 7 weeks, as Jane mentioned. The beautiful works on paper, the winner of the acquisition prize, the $15,000 acquisition prize, Daniel O'Shane's Sacred Waterhole piece, which is exquisite. There's some fabulous large works, a portrait of Les Twentyman, which is inescapable when you walk in, and some also very delicate works as well. Jane, thank you so much for coming in and spending an hour talking about the life and times of arts education and curation on the peninsula. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
That's Benny Walker and the tune from him called Feel So Right. I'm thrilled to say Gary Crittenden will be my guest next week on the Wordy Rapping Hood.